heard about it.
Read the paper. I'll tell you what somebody said to us. This is kind of interesting. When we were going to my mother and my sister and I, because we were going on a plane, you know, we don't fly, and so we passed by a man, it was a very fine passenger fellow, who was sitting in the train, I guess he was having dinner or something, and he said, "We're from Everett." He said, "Oh, that's the place where they massacre fellows up there, talking about the Everett massacre." I know I felt very embarrassed when he said that. I felt like it was a slur on my beautiful city.
Well, maybe you tell me about the Everett massacre, since you were there. Well, maybe you tell me a little background first about what your folks did and how you came to be living in Everett.
Well, because I was born there.
Uh-huh.
That's about the best way you can get there, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
To be born there. Well, my father was a businessman, an Everett businessman, and was able to acquire quite a little. He was a farm boy to start out with, a very poor farm boy, not to make it. And my mother was a farm girl, also living in Kansas. And he came out there and started he worked here in Seattle. When they started to move, they graded down all that land down there. It was all hilly at one time. Well, he worked on a grading truck when he first came here. I think he got here with 50 cents. That's all the money he had. And that wasn't too long after the fire. You know, Seattle had a fire. And so then he went to work for a pop manufacturer, so that made soft drinks. And then he went up to a little place called Snohomish. You probably are not familiar with, but he grew around for long enough to remember. And he started his own business up there. And then he moved down to Everett, Kansas. So it's just the story of a young guy with lots of ability to work and lots of ambition of going out and making good. So that's how I happened to be in Everett.
So were you still in high school when the massacre happened? Or?
Yeah, I was in high school. I don't know.
16 or 17?
17, yeah. Well, you see, I was just about ready to graduate, or maybe I had already graduated because I graduated in 1917. So I was ready to leave Everett for a few more years. And so we had guests that day, and my dad said, "Let's sit down and see what's going to happen." He knew all about what was going to happen.
How did he know?
Well, he knew because he belonged to a businessman's club. And when you read this book over here, you'll find out that all these men belonged to this club. And they were the fellows that really ran. They called them the merchants, I guess. I'd have to go back and look it up. Merchants Club, I think is the name of it. And they knew everything that was going on. Probably he was a fairly small businessman. He wasn't like some of these other fellows, like the people, Weyhauser, people up there who were in the process of making millions of dollars. But they all knew what was happening, and he knew what was going to happen. But he just wanted to go down and stay at a safe distance and look at it. So my sister and I went down. And if you happen to go up to Everett, you'll see there's a train, Great Northern Railroad, down there with a passenger loading. They still do some passengers loading them and unloading them there. And it's fairly high. It didn't have any restrictions. I don't know, maybe there are things built in front of it now. I haven't been up here long. And you could look right out to the bay. And you could see this Veronica, this little boat coming up with full of men. But we were so far away, so I couldn't count them. You know, I didn't know how many there were. And then, of course, you could see the fellows, the sheriff McRae, and some of the vigilantes, I'm not sure what they were going down on the pier to make these fellows turn around and go back to Seattle. They didn't want them to land. That was the idea. They didn't want them in their town at all. They had already beaten them up, or beaten up some of their friends. And so they were going to land anyway. You know, they weren't going to be stopped by some of the fellows who were going to scare the daylights out of them. And they started to land, and then they started to shoot. Now, there's always been a question who fired the first shot. Whether the vigilantes, the sheriff and his policemen, or whether the fellows on the boat. But anyway, the shots were being changed, and I could see some, a couple of men either jumped overboard, or one of them was killed, definitely, I knew that, but I didn't know they were jumping overboard or what, but I could see them. And the boat turned around and went back to the island.
What was it, what were your feelings then? Were you in sympathy with people trying to land? Or
no, I was in sympathy with the fellows that were trying to, on the boat, naturally. I was, because I didn't always believe everything my parents said, by any means, and I didn't always agree with them. But my sympathies were the fellows who were trying to get off the boat.
Was that just based on the fact that people were shooting at them, or were you previously sympathetic to the IWW, or...?
No, I don't think I was especially sympathetic because I didn't really know much about it. If you were going to school and I was interested in other things, boys' music and all sorts of other things, and so I wasn't interested in what was going on very much. It's quite, I don't know, lots of girls are still like that, I suppose, now, depending on the kind of a family you come from.
In your family, when you were growing up, were politics discussed at home, or...?
No, not especially.
Uh-huh.
It was a matter of trying to get ahead. In other words, my father felt it was very important to accumulate this piece of property and accumulate that piece of property. And we lived over in a place called Maple Street, which was down very close to the first botany that we had. And then we moved to a very nice house, built beautiful house up on Colby Avenue. It belongs to Red Cross now. And so that was where most of this was taking place.
Did that have any sort of lasting effect on you, the massacre? Or was it?
Well, I thought it was a terrible, horrifying thing. Now that was the first time, I guess, when I think about it, the last time that I really ever saw people being shot. Being shot, not being murdered, but just being shot at and being killed. That I think was the first time and the last time. I never thought of it in that way before. And I thought, sure, I was sympathized with the fellows on the boat. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been interested in all the books I've read all my life, trying to find out what this is all about and who are these people and what started all these things going, you know.
So then, did that start a whole process working?
I think possibly it really did. Although I've always been a great reader, as far as that goes, but I didn't always read political things. You know, I read plays and classics and so on. But it's so interesting. Now, that made no effect on my sister at all.
Uh-huh.
You know.
But...
You see, it's just the kind of... You have to be that kind of person, I guess.
So, from... Is it as clear-cut as from then on you started reading political things as well as other things?
No, when I went to... See, I was a ballet dancer. That's how I lived in New York for such a long time.
That's why, you're so limber now.
Oh, I don't know about that, but anyway, I went back to New York and just became absolutely absorbed in what I was doing. So I actually didn't, I started reading, I always read, I was nothing, but I didn't always read political things. And but I think that the germ was still there. You know, if you have an experience like that, it's not gone.
Mm-hmm. And where did that lead you later?
You mean my thinking about, well?
Oh, about politics.
Politics, yeah.
The I can see the books, but the tape can't. So that's why I'm asking you that.
Well, you see, then I married Mr. Bonamy, and of course he was a socialist. And so that I was married to him over 30 years. So my reading and his reading sort of coincided. And then of course I met a lot of, we had two different kinds of, he met a lot of musical people and theatrical people because of me, and I met a lot of political people because of him, because it was a very good, interesting combination.
So did that influence either him to become a ballet dancer or you to become a socialist?
I was never a socialist, really. But, well, you know, you always contribute to the other person. He contributed a lot to my life, and I contributed a lot to his life.
Uh-huh.
So, it was very nice.
Uh-huh.
ever read I Change Worlds?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, you know, she was a Seattle woman. She was on a newspaper here. The last time I saw her, I've seen her many times, heard her talk many times. She's a wonderful woman. The last time I saw her, she was really quite ill. She didn't stand to talk anymore. She sat down and talked.
Just after she'd been to Russia and come back?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, she came back. Then, of course, she died in Russia, didn't she?
In China.
China, yeah.
So, what was she like? Did you?
Well, just very outgoing, a big woman, you know, a large woman, and very impressive, actually. And you felt she was very kind, and very understanding, and very positive, of course. Naturally, she has to be positive. But oh, I think she's really wonderful woman.
Do you remember around the time of the massacre and the strike and?
Mm-hmm.
Was she an influence in the city at the time?
Well, you see, I wasn't here when that strike was going on.
Yeah, that's true. So were you gone? You left right before the strike, or maybe a year before the strike?
I can't remember. Well, I was in New York in 1920. Now I don't know whether I left in 1919, or I don't know. It was close to it anyway. I remember hearing about the strike. Everything stopped. Absolutely everything. Wasn't that terrific? Everything. I heard about it. There wasn't nothing. Just think of the influence of the people, the actions they had. You know.
Where did you hear about it? You said you heard about it.
Well, I heard about it because you read about it in the papers.
In New York, this was?
Yeah.
Or wherever you were at the
time? I read about it in New York. And then, of course, I came home in the summertime. And I could hear my father was telling about how everything stopped. You know, I just thought it was awful.
How did that influence his views of labor, the strike? Do you remember? I mean, was he more against or more for labor?
Well, I tell you, he was a businessman. I don't suppose these businessmen exist anymore. He never had a contract with anybody. He never had a written agreement. He was absolutely honest. There was never, he had no agreement in his business that if anyone got hurt, that there was no Medicare, no hospitalization. He paid every hospital bill for every worker that ever got hurt in his place. And he said that you would be paid at a certain time, you would be paid. And he never had a contract of any kind. It was absolutely unnecessary. He was the most honest individual you could possibly imagine.
So then, did you think that unions were a corrupting influence? Or?
I don't know whether he really thought that or not. He thought, of course, that people should work. He thought if they weren't working, they weren't working because they were lazy. And he didn't realize sometimes that there were other reasons why people weren't working. They either didn't have the ability, or they didn't the education, or they didn't have the strength. There were lots of reasons. But he didn't always realize that because he was a very strong and a very ambitious and a very alive man, you see. So that was always not the way he thought about things. But I don't know if that's going to tell you something. Oh, then it just show you how funny he was. There were no chain stores. The first chain store ever. We were not allowed to buy anything in that chain store. We couldn't buy bread. We couldn't buy anything there because they were corrupting them. They were ostracizing the small businessman that certain had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then he got left. We don't have any small businessmen anymore. So he could see all these things coming. But it was a sort of a bridge from the time of when he was young to the time of when things changed.
Mm-hmm.
And of course he fought it, like a lot of men at that time did.
So did something like the general strike shock him, or did he
feel
the revolution?
Well, I think what he felt, he didn't realize what power these people had. And I don't think that they knew themselves what power they had until they deserted it.
So then, the people, did you feel that when you came back in the summer, people's perception of labor had changed because of the strike?
Well, now, there would be absolutely nobody that I could talk to. There was nobody. I was not in the laboring class family. I didn't know any laboring people. All the people I knew were people of my class. They were either wealthier or the same level. They were, for instance, my friends married the governor's sons, and they were I probably was a lower middle class, and they were a little bit higher middle class, you know.
Uh-huh.
But so there was no discussion of labor at all.
So they didn't, did they talk about the strike though, or?
No, they didn't talk about the strike. I should say not, why bother with something like that?
Uh-huh.
Didn't influence them any,
uh-huh.
you know.
But people like your father talked about it sometimes, or?
I don't think my father never discussed it. But they certainly did, it was never discussed at the table.
Uh-huh.
So it had no influence as far as the actual, and I didn't know anybody. I didn't know anybody that discussed this stuff. All the people that worked for my father were all happy working for him. They were well paid, and they were our friends.
How about years later when you were dealing more with socialist people? Did that happen also in Seattle?
No, that happened right here.
Oh, but in this area.
Mm-hmm. When I came back to live, when I met my husband, he was the one who brought the socialist thing up, and he was a member of the Communist Party for a short time, and I know all the communists in Seattle.
Yeah, well, that's all right. You can take that anything you don't want. But I am looking for all the old communists now. You know, I can't find them. I must talk to them about this, right?
They're old boy. How long are you going to be here?
Another month.
Oh, well, I'm not going to be time enough to do anything. I know some people need to talk to me.
Well, I'm going to have to work on you a little then to see if you can line me up with them. It's hard. I've been wondering whether this says something about it being bad for your health to be radical, because I found a lot of people
who... It's not bad for your health.
So where are they? Well, how come everyone I meet
Well, now let me see. Farrah Eckroth, I was going to call her, and Doris, and Archie, and all these people. They may not have been communists, but they were so close to communists that they were all waving the red flag anyway. And I know a lot of communists. Oh, they were waving. They would never start anything.
That's interesting. Do you think any of them were around during the strike?
Oh, I'm sure that some of them were, because I wasn't here, and I didn't know them then. And I don't know, was there communism during the strike? No, there wasn't. Well, yes, there was socialism.
Uh-huh.
But not communism.
Uh-huh. Well, we're going to have to negotiate this. I'd definitely love to meet those people and see if I can get them to talk about what it was like from a radical perspective.
I was going to call. Sarah's had an operation on her foot. She's a very interesting woman. And Auntie Topple is head of the... I belong to this Women for Peace and all that organization that's been going for a long time. But I don't go to anything anymore because I don't go out in the evening. I don't have a car. And my sister is not at all liberal-minded. She's the one with the car. So we got, oh, and there's a guy down there you'd love to meet. His name is Mr. Core, Bill Core. He comes up here once in a while. He's an Irishman. He's really quite a nice guy. Well, let me see. Maybe I can do something. I'll have to think about
great.
It a little while. Now, Bill is a real, he was a communist for quite a while. And maybe still is. I don't know whether any communists anymore. Well, now he wouldn't know about right, because maybe he didn't live here then. He might have lived in Chicago at that time. But Bear Taylor and some of those other people that I know would.
Right.
Have you got your car on here?
Yes, I do.
Oh.
And I will go anywhere to talk to them. I've already been down to Olympia this week, so I'll go anywhere.
And her husband, Mel Eckroth, he's a good old Swede. Maybe I can take you over to her house. I'll have to find out.
Great. It could be any time in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
I have to find out, you know, if it's possible. And Doris, Venus and Doris Westman.
Now, Venus Westman called me.
Do you know Venus?
I'm going to go talk with him next week.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Well, they were here not too long ago.
I'm looking so sad.
You see, when my sister leaves, then I have all these people there. She covered Moses Lake. So then I have everybody in that I want. What are you going to do? You're going to talk to him?
Yeah, I'm going to go over and meet him at the bookstore where he's.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Well, now, and his wife, Doris, she'll be there.
I don't know. He didn't.
Well, be sure you say, give her my love.
Okay.
Yeah. He's very nice. Very nice.
He sounds great.
Yeah, he is. He's a nice guy. And, well, there's Doris and Nell and Linus and Nelson. Barrett over here. Not this business, but the business before that. So I try to keep in touch with those people. They're all exciting people as far as I'm concerned.
Well, so let me go back to the question that started this all. When you came back to Seattle and got involved with the various left-wing groups, did the strike come up in their conversation years later? Did they refer back to the strike?
No, I don't think so. I don't think we talked about the strike. We were too busy. We were all on the endangered list. We were on the red list.
You're talking now in
I'm talking about the witch hunt, yes.
Uh-huh.
With McCarthy and what was the name of this guy in Spokane? He was a horrible man. The Jameses, I haven't read anything about the Jameses. They had
the local.
Yeah, repertory theater. They were all. Oh, and this fellow was really terrific. Wait a minute, I have to get his quote. Have you?
Yeah, my father used to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Nice thing he wrote in there.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really a good book. And he lives out in the University District.
Hmm.
I think he's still in there. This is another Scott Murray book.
I've never read it.
You haven't read it.
You know.
Oh, what a pretty Christmas card. Well, I will see if Bear, and I don't know if he'll come over here, or maybe go over there.
Anywhere. Go to the end of the earth.
Auntie Koppel probably wouldn't be yet. She's very much involved in women's march for peace. She's the wife of an ex-pipe maker. Her husband had some pipes in Seattle, and she was in debt to sell it out. But we've had a great time together. I see her every once in a while, and but she's very busy doing that. And she's independently rich, you know. She can do all the traveling and go to Europe. And
think she'd be interested in talking about that conference?
She'd probably be there.
Uh-huh, well, she may not know that, I mean, I don't think anyone but the planners of the conference know that it's going to be,
what kind of it?
Well, I'm not sure. All I know is that the woman who called me up to ask for my research, I'd met some radical women from that time, said that she really needed to know, at least if it was going to be a keynote speaker, if you want to do that by the end of this weekend. So I guess it's going to be within a month or so.
Well, I sometimes I get notices, you know, for these things. Oh, gee, he doesn't want to be kissed. Not by you, anyway. Well, let me know. I'd like to go to it.
No, but I'll find out all the details for you. And I tell you to start pressuring you on whether you found me my communist.
Well, let me see. There's Core, and there's. You ought to go down and talk to him. Wait a minute, I'll call him up.
Fine, I don't want to pressure him, you know.
No, what time is it? It's 9 o'clock. Well, I mean, maybe he's a carpenter. And I know he's building something over in the Pike Place Market. I know that, definitely. But he's an interesting man. And I'm sure, well, maybe he might be able to. Let me see. Oh, what can I do? Maybe I can make an appointment for you to see him.
That'd be great.
Or something.
That'd be great. Do you want to wait then and not call him tonight? I just don't want to be obtrusive. switch back on. Anything else from...
Well, you see, I'm not very good at the revolution because I wasn't good.
But this is interesting, the time around there. It must have been strange for you later when you started dealing with left-wing types. Must have been very different from the way you were brought up.
Oh, I'm very adaptable. These people have always been very interesting. Very interesting to me, anyway. And they're still exciting and stimulating.
Why do you think it is that you went one direction, your sister went the other?
Have you got any brothers and sisters?
I have two brothers.
Do they all go the same way?
Yeah, pretty much. As a matter of fact.
A lawyer. Oh, well, by the way, he was the lawyer for that, some of those people in the revolution. Oh, Jeannie, shut up! The brown dog put up the street. And, his son is the most square, straight-laced lawyer you can possibly imagine. This man was a liberal, a radical, just the most radical. He was always a lawyer for the underdog. Of course, he was making money, because nobody paid him.
Mm-hmm.
But there's your grandmother.
It must have been, aside from the shooting, the Everett massacre, were there other things that you'd hear about, not necessarily that maybe were talked about in your family, but all the commotion with the IWW around that time? For instance, you were telling me about when they forced IWW people to run the gauntlet.
Yeah.
Did you know about that at the time?
I read it. And I would see these. There was a place, a street called Wetmore. When you read that book, they had their soapboxes out there, and we used to see them.
Oh, you did see them?
Yeah, see them talking. But of course, I never listened. You know, I'd see them talking, and they'd be jabbing. Sometimes Salvation Army is in one corner, and I don't know if they're on another corner.
And what did that seem like to you then? What did you think about it?
Well, I thought, they were just a bunch of radicals. They probably bombed. They were having jobs and, all that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
Much about it.
That must have been interesting. Yeah. Do you remember when they came in, when they flooded the city trying to defend the free speech thing, where they kept getting up on the soapbox when they...
Well, of course, they all landed in jail. They could say about two words, and they took them off to jail. And they got the jail pretty well filled up, these fellas. And I don't think my father thought that was a good idea, because he had to see them.
He was practical, huh?
Yeah, we had to see them, sure.
Uh-huh.
Oh, God.
Was he still alive when you moved left?
Oh, yeah, because he disliked my husband very much. Oh, I was ostracized. He married after my mother died, he married a woman who later became Mrs. Glazer. The Glazer bottling people was Gordon Green, the old man. And we called her Martin because her first husband's name had been Martin. And she never did accept me at all. She never accepted my husband, never. And my father didn't accept his child, which was even worse. He liked, I have two sons. I have a son who's 64, and one who is 34, no, 44. And the first son was the son of my husband that I married in New York, who was we were all in theatrical business. And the other son was the son of Mr. Bonnevie. And he's now first born in Seattle, since he's in the graduate service in that very brilliant condition. But my father didn't even like that. So not that that bothered me too much, because I didn't care, because it wasn't too bad.
So did it even get as far as having discussions with your father about politics?
Just really something. this fellow Carl that I told you about a few minutes ago, well, he and my husband were socially unsocial together up in Evans. And I went to the Orient. I had my own company and toured the Orient, and I was gone for 2 years. And so when I came back, Carl told my husband, I call him Bonnie, it just seemed like his first name, to come and see me. Because he was a friend. So he did, he came to see me. My mother had died while I was in the Orient, and my husband had died. The husband of my husband I married in New York. And he came and he got into a fight with my father. They kept testing the sun poison. I was in the other side of that house, which is where it was. And he kept him up at 12 o'clock at night discussing politics with him. Well, you might as well discuss politics with his chair. Didn't mean anything, absolutely. And of course, that was the thing that he didn't have done it. And from that day on, his body was a radical and a bomb and a this and a that and everything. So that was the way it started out. Because I hadn't married him then, I was just coming around, that was all, you know.
Uh-huh. what did he do? What was
his job? My husband's job? He sold medical equipment. He had a store. He was a very smart man, I wish I had. I think I had the brains he had.
So he was a small businessman?
Yeah, he was.
That's
and he always said he was, which always annoyed me to death. Well, I tell you, he could not. He for a long time, for quite a while, when I first met him, he worked for a company called the Hanover Company in New York. It was a big company. What they wanted to do because he wanted to do what he wanted to do. And he was a renegade. He wanted to do just what he wanted to do. It didn't make any difference. And we had a terrible time because this was during the Depression. Before I knew him, he was a marvelous salesman. He could sell you anything from nature like what it was. And he sold all these sun lamps and everything, and they started to stack. So the people didn't pay for them. They were all turned in, and he had spent the money. So we not only had the Depression, we also had to pay. We had to pay all that money back to the company. And of course, he could have declared bankruptcy, but he was a very honest man. So we just struggled to do this person plus having nothing to eat practically.
How did he become a socialist?
Well, his father was he was second generation Norwegian. And when he was a small boy, he couldn't even speak English. He went to a Norwegian school, so it took him quite a while to learn English and to learn to read English. And his father had moved out here from Chicago. There was a big Norwegian settlement, maybe still is in Chicago, I don't know. And they lived in the settlement, so they were all clans. They were all full friends. And he moved out here to Seattle, and the father got a job as a painter, all the dining cars and all that lovely work. And a finisher, and his mother was a midwife. So, because you see, in Chicago, a midwife was all was fine, you know. Imagine this woman who had a very fine education, couldn't speak English, and she yet was able to get a job and make money. She actually supported the family. And I don't know, I suppose they everything that other people had, they thought they should acquire. If he was in that, they should be given it. Should be given to him. She divided everything up. I don't know how he became so
good. Who's in his family?
Yeah. And then he was a conscientious objector in the first war. He didn't believe in war at all. And he refused to go. And the fact that he had a good hernia, so that gave him a chance to get out. Oh, gee. Would you like some tea or coffee or something?
Sure. I'd love some.
All right. Well, sure. Oh. Thank you, sir, fella. The thing they're doing down at the Symphony now, Earl Robinson's Ballad for Americans. I know him very well. Are you going?
No, I'm not going, but he lives in Santa Barbara, you know.
Oh, does he now?
And everybody cares.
But I had planned. They're smoking folk music. He's a horrible singer.
Well, I don't know if I want to sit on a tape, but he's a better writer than you.
Yeah,
singer.
That's right. He's a much better writer. I hope that's not on there, is it?
Well, I could take off any tape you want.
But he's a grand person.
Yeah.
Well, that's exciting, isn't it, huh?
Yeah.
I wonder when he, well, he's up here now, or he will be here when that...
That's right, he was up, when I don't know if he still is.
I don't know either. I don't, when are they supposed to do this?
Oh, you mean up for that?
Yeah. I'm sure that he will be here.
Right. He was up right before I got here. I got here, April 20th. He was up here right that weekend for some political conference. I don't know too much, but maybe he came back or he's coming
back.
Well,
I just assume that he's coming up for this, because every time that they do anything, the different stuff at the university, he would always come up. I think the last time I talked to him, I talked to him for something he'd been up here for. He and Tech Liot, the university and music department, are good friends.
So is that opening soon around here?
Oh, you mean for the past of the symphony?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I went to a movie the other night, the Harvard Exit, with my son and daughter-in-law, and I said, Earl Robinson's going to be here at one of those posters. And I said, don't you remember him? After all, you knew him when he was a kid. And he said, no, what is it? And I said, well, you're going to play it. And he said, oh, yeah, I guess I am. So I didn't even notice the date on it.
Well, I live next to the Harvard Exit, so I'll check.
Do you? Have you seen that picture?
The three women?
Yeah.
No, I haven't seen. Is it good?
Wild.
Wild.
Wild, yeah.
You think that if those people like the Wobblies and your husband were around, that they would think that this is the type of society they wanted, or close?
No, I don't think it's the type of society they wanted, because it depends. It just depends on, of course, the socialists, this is not a socialistic society we have. What do you think it is? Do you think it's what kind of society do you think we have?
Well, it seems to be sort of a modified capitalist society.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there's a chance of it being more socialist than it is? I do.
That it could be.
Yeah, what about the railroads? Of course, I always believe, that the railroads, the mines, the forests, that belongs to all of us, and it should not belong to individuals. No individual group has the right to own any of these things that belong to us.
Do you think the same is true of energy sources and
things
like that?
Yes, it belongs to the people.
Mm-hmm.
And it shouldn't belong to City Light or one of the big light companies or one of the big, like Weyerhaeuser or some of the things, mm-hmm. That should not belong to them.
But when you say that the things that your husband and Carl and the IWW mm-hmm. were fighting for, they've come, you mean?
We've got them, because they wanted good pay, and they wanted negotiation, and they wanted 8 hours, what is it, so many days a week, or 5 hours or whatever. All that stuff's all come to pass. That old hat now, they've got
uh-huh.
that.
Uh-huh. Do you think that they would approve of the labor movement today? How would they feel about it?
I don't know. I think that I disapprove of the big boys at the top, because I think a lot of them are crooked. And I think they own too many things and they have too much money. And there's a limit. There's a limit to what people get paid. Of course, we're in the inflationary spiral, you know that. So that's got to end someplace, sometime, somehow. How is it going to do it? Any idea?
Your taste, not my taste.
Well, I don't know what the answer is. Nobody else does.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know whether the IWW can approve it, the way the world is right
uh-huh.
now.
Yeah, but you think in terms of on-the-job conditions, that the things they were fighting for mostly come to pass?
Sure. But, of course, those people are agitated, and you always have to have agitators. Otherwise, nobody else gets passed. Just like the people down south that went down there to the work of the Negroes. A lot of those people were agitated. That's fine.
How did you feel about the civil rights movement when it was?
I think it's all right. I live in a tax-free and Negro neighborhood. That is, the funny part about this is it's becoming white, which is quite interesting. Every time a house is sold down here, it goes to white people.
So was it white and it turned black and now it's turned black?
When I came here 40 years ago, 42 years ago, there wasn't a Negro within miles of this place. And then I remember that there was a house down here, then the Jews came in, and there was a house down here that this Jewish man, a doctor, wanted to sell, and he sold it, supposedly, to a white woman, and the white woman had a black husband. The whole neighborhood took up money and bought that house away from them, and they reported to the neighborhood. And then people, to my way of thinking, which is absolutely asinine, they all got scared to death. So they started to buy houses across the lake. And now they have to go to work every morning and go back and forth. And I just think it's lovely. I just sit right here and look out and see cool poor men coming in at 7 o'clock in the morning and driving under all that traffic, driving back out there. And it's just as crowded over there as it is over here. So they should have stayed here where it takes a half hour to get downtown. Take 15 minutes in the car. See how stupid that is? What are you running away from? You're running away from the world. This is dumb.
I was going to say, how do you feel about the women's movement?
Well, to me, I think some of it's all right. But you see, the people of the theater, if you've worked in the theater all your life, you have much more freedom because you're always working with a man on the same level as a rule. In other words, you're selling a talent. If you have a good talent, you'll be paid just as much as the man next to you. And so that sort of thing never touched me.
Well, you certainly did a lot of things that most women were not doing, like going to the Orient for 2 years.
Well, probably. But then the people, dancers and theatrical people, always traveled all over the world. There's nothing unusual about that. But, I think you should have equal pay for work, and I think a woman should have, if she's pregnant, she should be paid and kept on the job, providing she wants to. There's certain things that I think are fine about it. But my Lord, think how old it is. Think how old the movement is. What about Mrs. Pankhurst and those people in London, the ones that were starved to death, and you know, all the horrible things that went through when those women were getting to vote?
Uh-huh.
Suffrage.
Yeah. Long time.
Yeah, it's a long time. Anytime you have any kind of a change, it takes a long time. But how do men feel about it? Scared. In other words, you can wash your dishes too, just the same as I can. Not that it happened in my house. But
uh-huh.
then I believe it was the same.
Was it just because it wasn't thought of at that time?
No, it was because of the background, his background. After all, my father didn't wash dishes, and it didn't make any difference if his mother went out and brought two babies into the world every night. She had to still go home and make bread and all that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
So that's just wrong. I mean, that whole thing, that whole idea is stupid. Wrong.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah. I guess
I don't think a girl should play football, and I don't think that she should. She doesn't have to play softball with the boys, although I used to play football with the boys myself. So, and that was a long time ago.
But should she, if she wants to?
Sure.
Should she have the chance?
Sure. She should be able to do anything that she wants to. I don't think that she should be prohibited at all. She should
uh-huh.
do what she wants to do. And certainly a lot of good brains are going to waste, because women's brains are just as good as men's brains.
And I think that maybe that's starting to seep in where I would say 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, it was to most men, I think, a joke.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that to many more men now,
mm-hmm.
because their girlfriends started saying it, you know, things like that,
mm-hmm.
they suddenly realized this is true. This is really true, that they're also human beings.
Yeah, but, you know, I never thought of a man thinking that I wasn't a human being, because he'd better not think that.
Well said.
But I suppose that's really true.
Uh-huh.
I know my, I don't know why I say that, because my father, what do I want to do this for? Because all I'm not supposed to do is to get married anyway. That was the goal, you know, to get married anyhow.
Was he opposed to your dancing?
That was a lot of nonsense. He knew I was going to go to hell, wherever that is. That's what he thought. Nobody was ever on the stage in my family. No one. Nobody was even ever backstage.
Was that because it was, did he think it was immoral or?
Well, I don't know. Well, I guess he thought it was immoral after the fashion, because I know he was very proud of it, because he didn't smoke, because people were starting, women were starting to smoke then. And he thought that was wonderful. He said, my girls don't smoke, you know, and my girls don't drink.
He must have gone crazy when he went to the Orient then.
No, it was all right. He told that. That was years later. After all, I was married and everything ended. And all the
different things. Uh-huh. How about when you went to New York?
Well, it was very hard, I think, for him to get money to send us to New York to study. My teacher studied boys. And he sent my mother and myself and my sister to New York. And she stayed there for about a year until we got
our job. So he did support it, even though
he
didn't
approve of it. And I think he was very proud because we did something with our lives.
Because we were good at it.
Yeah, because we were good at it. I think he was very disappointed she didn't have boys. That's where the big trouble was. He'd love to have a couple of sons, but he'd have a couple of daughters. He had a new thing to say about that. Yeah.
Before I turn over this tape, I know there's at least one college in this area that wants to make copies of my tape. I think I'll have to edit this one substantially.
You better cut some of that stuff out.
Yeah, but it's really been an interesting, in a lot of ways, it's the most interesting to college.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah, those fellows, they really took it. Well, you know, you have to be a special kind of a person to do something like that.
Yeah.